Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
You never grow facial hair.
No, I don't. I never have.
I don't know. That's interesting.
It was just a thing. I just never really got into it.
I mean, if you ever see me with a beard and I'm wearing one now, it's laziness.
I'm telling you, beards are out. Look at Malibu Barbie. She can date anyone she wants, but she's with Malibu Ken. Why? Because Malibu Ken doesn't have a beard.
I look like Stumpy from an old John Wayne Western when I don't shave.
I miss that Western. I don't remember Stumpy.
Laying down the Lord. I told you to get back in there.
And then getting torn off his shelf.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
He'd be like kind of itching his face like, if you don't want to, don't like the beans, you don't eat the beans.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. So I guess in, what was the movie, Rio Bravo? That was Walter Brennan. A lot of people texted in. Did you know, and I'm sure you did, that Walter Brennan, three-time Academy Award-winning actor, and he wound up being the guy, you know.
Good morning, Mully. No, I did not.
Watching The Prisoner.
Did not know that. Happy Tuesday. That's a good little tidbit to wake up to.
Best Supporting Actor.
All right. Yeah, that's very good trivia.
Yeah, thank you.
I will stump somebody later today. So, yes, I did not realize that. Good Tuesday morning. Going to be a big night of baseball in Chicago.
It's weird yesterday.
Yesterday was odd.
Somebody tell MLB that one of our teams must play.
Well, somebody tell MLB, I don't know that this is a problem, but how unusual it is to have both teams in town. Is that a good thing?
You know, it's a good thing if you could do a doubleheader.
What's Bruce going to do?
You can't do that.
Bruce has got to pick a side.
I will bet you a $5 American bill that Bruce goes to the Cubs game.
I bet you're probably right.
Yeah.
But
I think that's the more important of the two.
There is intrigue on the south side. The Cardinals are in town. Wilson Contreras comes in. You've got a team that has been better than expected, and they're in third place.
I don't know how many games Wilson Contreras has played against the White Sox. I'm guessing it's like 20. But he has hit 10 home runs against the Sox in his career, dating back to being a Cub.
He's a Sox killer.
Well, I mean, I don't know if he's a killer.
He's a Sox killer.
He's hit some home runs.
He's hit some home runs against them.
Yeah, there's something to see.
But it's
a
very interesting evening in Chicago baseball-wise because you've got – it's a Midwest convention.
Yeah, it's
– St. Louis, Milwaukee, and two Chicago teams.
Yeah, it's an NL Central feast.
It is.
And then the White Sox.
And then the White Sox, yes.
Yeah.
Cardinals playing better. They're in third place, tied with the Reds. Seven games back of the Cubs, the Brewers 5.5 back, and the Cubs comfortably in front. 16-game lead, and that makes this series different in that it doesn't feel make or break, but it does feel like one. You want to keep good things going.
Cardinals kind of trending the wrong way coming off a losing series against those Brewers you mentioned.
Yeah, that was a pretty nasty series, too.
And I believe who's pitching tonight for the Cardinals? I believe... he's not, is it Liberatore? He is not pitching very well. His last three outings, he has a 10.5 ERA.
Well, they're struggling. They're not having a great season. They're slightly above 500, so there's going to be some weaknesses.
Yeah.
They're not the perfect team.
They're hardly the perfect.
No, they're trying to put it all together.
I think that this was kind of a redoing year for them. I didn't expect them to be in much contention.
No.
And I thought it was the Brewers that were better.
They still may fall out before the trade deadline and be sellers.
Yeah.
Matthew Liberatore is going against Shane Smith tonight on the south side.
And Liberatore, the last three games, 10-point-something ERA. Let's hope that keeps up.
Chad Patrick for the Brewers tonight at Wrigley Field. Ben Brown.
You say that like you don't have – you can't muster your kind of Kate Horton enthusiasm when you say the name.
I said
Ben
it after
Brown.
His last start. I still kind of believe it. If they went to a opener tonight, it wouldn't be the worst idea because of the way that he struggled in the first inning last time out. He's had success in the opener phase coming in the second inning. Wouldn't be the worst idea.
Are the Brewers lefty enough at the top of their lineup to justify that? Because that's usually the way they do it, right?
That is the way they do it. I don't know if matchups is the biggest reason why I would do it.
Oh, you would do it just because Ben Brown
started
slow.
He seems to lack command early on.
Okay.
He seems to have a problem cycling down, kind of settling down and getting in that place where it's just him in the glove and he's throwing strikes. And I think you can see early on whether or not he's going to be a guy who has command in the first inning or not. And last time out, in Philadelphia, tough environment, he didn't.
I think it'd be fun if you went to the game and after the first pitch, you just screamed, "Get him out!"
Should I?
Well, it'd be hilarious.
Sit behind
you knew
the dugout,
it immediately.
Get some of those really cool score seats and sit there and just embarrass the station.
You wouldn't embarrass
You're
the station.
You're a fraud. Who's that? Oh, yeah. Geez. That's Ha. He did seem a little tightly wound.
I told you, once upon a time, years and years ago, when Adam Dunn was playing for the White Sox,
yeah.
He started to walk toward the home plate, and I heard someone scream, "Get it over with," and I realized it was me. And I was yelling about his impending strikeout.
Did you really heckle Adam Dunn?
I don't think that was a heckle. I think someone just yelled, "Get it over with."
That's heckling.
I just think it was a difficult. I watch that guy play a lot, and mm-hmm. That's how I felt.
Enough's enough. Yeah,
get it over with.
Was he the guy that probably made you as fed up as any Sox player in recent history?
I don't know what happened. I don't remember heckling. I hate that term.
No, but if you went to a game, you'd boo him. Is he the most likely White Sox player you'd boo?
I never liked Adam Dunn as a White Sox. Yeah. He seemed to be doing some things okay before he got here.
He was fine Cincinnati Red.
Yes.
Had a good run with the Reds.
Right.
Then he came here and stopped hitting. And and Ozzie gave him some vodka and orange juice.
Came here and he was done.
Did you give Adam Dunn a mental break or he just
kept I had two bottles of vodka.
I love that.
That is awesome.
Love Oz. Missed Oz last night. The Sox, were off. Had no fun at the old ballpark. Yeah. I know. You miss Ozzie. He becomes part of your summer.
How did you handle the NBA finals?
Well, I don't really think that I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I concluded last night that as much respect as I have for Oklahoma City and their depth and their 68 victories and their coach whose name nobody can spell and SGA and Jalen Williams, all those things. Jalen Williams was outstanding.
Yeah.
I don't really like that team. There's nothing about that team I like.
Alex Caruso.
Yeah, okay.
Try hard guy.
He's okay. I don't really like that team. I actually don't like them at all.
You hear all this national stuff and you hear the ESPN people and it's just they can't help themselves. They kind of get carried away. They get one guy says something and then they all say it. They basically. The echo chamber was Jalen Williams equals Scottie Pippen, maybe better than Scottie Pippen. I got to tell you, if I hear that again,
it's a reach.
There's going to be
it's a reach. That's not that wasn't
language.
My takeaway. That wasn't my takeaway.
Language.
If you want to have, if you're straining for a Bulls comparison or a Bulls point to make out of that last night, it is worth remembering Jalen Williams was drafted 12th. I'm just saying,
but
he was a 12th overall pick, right? And the Bulls have the 12th overall pick. You can't find a player.
Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is Mike.
You didn't like that.
And Jalen Williams is
Scottie. No.
That's what they're talking about.
But I don't have to like it. We don't have to buy into it.
No, I think we have to call it out.
Yeah, it's too soon for that.
Exactly.
Come on.
Can we have a year or two?
Are they going to win five more?
Oh,
really?
They got enough draft picks to win 20.
Well, wait, see how that plays out. You're right. I mean, it could be something. We could be at the beginning of a dynasty. I just don't feel it.
No.
And I don't know that I would enjoy it.
Why do we have to go to the extreme example all the time? You know what I'm saying?
Well, you're playing into it right now.
Because I mentioned it?
Yes.
Well, it was everywhere. Did you not hear any of that stuff?
But I'm saying, you know, Wait, prepare yourself, David.
Blah, blah, blah. You're going to hear it all day.
I'm not going to hear it all day.
You're going to hear it all day.
I'm not.
Yep.
I'm not going to listen to anything except for country music.
I will bet you a $5 bill, U.S. currency, that you hear that more than complaining about it.
It is a crutch. I mean, it's just an easy comp, I suppose, for people to make. But I don't see that a comparison. Plus, that was 25 years ago, 27 years ago.
It's absurd.
Well, it's lazy.
It's so lazy. But that's what I'm saying. They get one talking point, and everyone starts chewing on it, and then they keep chewing on it. And then
didn't see that.
People bring it. Oh, my God.
Did not enjoy the way the Pacers let go of the rope last night. I feel like that was a bad game for them. Tyrese Halliburton clearly is compromised.
And
somehow,
I think it's interesting because you know who's getting criticized. You're not hearing a lot of criticism for Tyrese Halliburton, but Rick Carlisle all of a sudden, what did he do? Why did he take out the guard
and T.J. McConnell?
Yes,
I think you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. Rick Carlisle has been the biggest reason, one of the biggest reasons the Pacers are where they are.
No question.
And I think Tyrese Halliburton, regardless of the way he played in the first half when he didn't score a field goal and didn't until, I mean, this was a guy that was not playing.
He hurt himself.
At a high level.
It's the same injury he had last round. He's got a calf.
No doubt. But if I'm Rick Carlisle and I've got a player who has made every play in the fourth quarter to get us there, I'm probably going to see what I can get out of him because he's probably telling me he can do it.
How do you get him to not play?
How do you
keep him out of there? You'd have to like call security on his dad. Well, you have to do that anyway. But then you'd have to call
his dad's
it on
already
him.
Being escorted around. Oh, that'd be a rough night for pops.
I'm sorry, that's
kind of a cheap shot.
It was a cheap shot.
How about Pascal Siakam in the fourth quarter? That guy was everywhere. He came through and stepped up when Halliburton couldn't, and you felt bad for Halliburton because he's in a position to carry them in every other fourth quarter, and he's been very good this postseason and taken a step forward, but last night just didn't have it.
He was 0-for-6 shooting. Can you imagine Tyrese Halliburton?
It's going to leave a mark because people are going to remember.
Well, he's hurt.
I know, but it won't matter to a lot of people in the echo chamber, where facts are rarely necessary. It's strong opinions, polarization, and repetition. Those are things that you need in the echo chamber. But Tyrese Halliburton is hopefully going to be better for Game 6, but I don't know.
I don't know how you get better.
I don't know how that heals.
It's like a soft tissue injury. I don't know how it gets better.
Could be a problem.
It could be a real problem.
But I found myself not really liking OKC last night, and I don't know why.
That's interesting. Maybe because they were beating your Hoosiers.
That might be part of it.
Or Pistons or whatever they call them.
I kind of got into the whole Indiana story.
Yeah. What was the line? It's not just a city.
But this is Indiana.
That's it.
Had nothing to do with
it's
the city.
It's not just a city. Close enough. That's what it was.
I get what you're saying. But tonight's hockey night, so it's a shift my focus, and I'll be disappointed in a different way tonight.
Yeah, this is an elimination game.
I got to tell you, these finals are turning into really depressing exercises.
They're in Florida, right?
They're in Florida. The cup will be in the building, as they say. The cup will be in the building. And they'll show it in the third period if Florida clings to a one-goal lead, and they'll show it getting polished in the background. And
I can't get enough of that of the blonde-haired guy that carries the cups around. I saw him when your man got the Rookie of the Year award in Naperville or whatever. He was a guy escorting that trophy to him. Let's recap here for a second.
Let's see.
Oh, I love that.
You're talking about Lane Hudson.
Yes.
Winning the Calder Cup.
Thank you.
He's from Barrington, not Naperville.
Whatever. It was some suburb.
Close enough, right?
And the guy, the guy from Creature of the Damned or whatever, the albino guy is out there with the trophy, although I thought he was born in this country.
It's Phil Pritchard.
Yes.
It's the same guy who's been there forever, I believe.
That's what I just said.
And he's the keeper of the cup.
And he will be shining the cup.
He will be shining the cup. He says, hey, Phil, haven't seen you in a while.
He'll be in the building.
Did you know that we passed the 10-year anniversary was Sunday of the Blackhawks winning at home against the Lightning, the last time they won a Stanley Cup final.
Wow.
It's been a decade.
There's a lot of these moments.
I know.
I mean, every year it seems like we're getting, hey, you know, it's been like 55 years since the Bulls won a game.
Why don't you like Phil Pritchard, though?
Oh, I love him. I'm saying it was good to see him. I was talking him up.
He's aging well.
He looks great.
Just like
himself.
The cup. Yeah. Can he still lift it?
How was my complimenting him and saying he's going to be in the building?
You made him sound like the guy carrying the cup around.
That guy with the white gloves on.
Who was in Naperville.
Well, wherever. Barrington. I beg your pardon.
Lane Hudson's a good, dynamic hockey player.
Let me tell you something. You try to grow up on the South Side and be able to differentiate between Barrington, Naperville. They're all kind of O'Hare or wherever. They're all 30-mile drives.
Auroraville West.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever. Glenbard, Glencoe, Glenview, whatever.
Who won the state championship baseball?
Libertyville.
I was trying to remember where Liberty is.
Right next to Mundelein and between Mundelein and Lake Forest.
Yeah, I know. You lived up there. I'm just saying it's beyond Lake Forest. I was trying to just picture it in my head.
It's a very nice community.
I kept thinking of Lincoln Way.
And no,
I was like,
no.
Mulligan.
Lincoln Way's down south.
I know. I pointed south. Up. Libertyville's over there.
How long have you lived here?
I've lived here my entire life.
How could you not know where Libertyville is?
I did. I just was trying to. There's a lot of, you know, Lincoln Way, Lockport, Libertyville. There's a lot of high schools, David. I used to cover all of them. I used to have to drive around. I've been to all of them.
You know, at some point, you mentioned high schools. We need to spend some time, probably not today because we're unprepared, but we need to get our hands on. The Sun-Times did a special section over the weekend about the greatest high school basketball players in Chicago. And they broke it down into different leagues, different parts of town.
Buckner.
They had their Quinn Buckner.
He was Bill when he was in high school. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
So I'm here for you, buddy.
Thank you
for correcting me.
I'm sorry.
You fell into the trap I set.
I didn't realize that Quinn Buckner had one of those moments.
He
let the ball roll right between his legs in the fourth quarter. Time ran out. Quinn Buckner was on their Mount Rushmore.
Yes, he was.
With Cazzy Russell, Derrick Rose, and Isaiah Thomas. And
great high school
players. It's a great source of conversation. Yep. It's a great source of debate. And they did a terrific job of assembling all of the facts and all of the backgrounds and all of the photos. It was really – I saw it yesterday I was at the United Center.
Bill Buckner was one of the stars of the greatest high school team in Illinois state history. Generally regarded as such.
Did you, just first glance, those four guys, do you think that they omitted anybody, obviously, in your mind?
Well, I mean,
because you have been here all your life.
There are plenty of players that deserve, but the problem is those are some of the most successful players.
And accomplished,
And accomplished, and, you know, I mean, for Quinn Buckner, he was an extraordinary leader. He was a great player. And he ended up playing in the NBA, but there are guys that have had better NBA careers. So I don't know what the parameters are, like whether you're talking about guys that dominated the high school scene, or if you're talking about guys that went on to success, great careers.
Where does Mark Aguirre fit on your list?
Mark Aguirre was an unbelievable talent when he was at Westinghouse.
I wondered if that would have been how close it was for him being the fifth guy they considered. But
Mark Aguirre, I remember going to see him at DePaul because he was this, you know, legendary high school player. And I wasn't even in high school, but we were going to DePaul to see Mark Aguirre. And he was, you know, he was such a wild player because he was like, you'd go watch the layup line. And Mark Aguirre was hardly the biggest guy on a team. And he was kind of a portlier fellow when he was younger than he was when by the time his career ended.
Weren't there fitness concerns?
Oh, my fitness concerns. But I remember, like, you know, guys taking turns in the layup line. Mark Aguirre, like, is, like, over the rim, kind of head over the rim. Like, he was an unbelievable talent.
Great athlete.
Great offensive
great shooter.
Player.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. But I watched a game one time where, you know, we're in that alumni gym, alumni hall, alumni gym, And Aguirre dunks, and then you're back on the other end, and the official, like, all of a sudden has to stop the game to call a technical because he's still hanging on the rim. Like, it was – and then Ray would get up, and he'd be like, you know, it was unbelievable how undisciplined Mark Aguirre was in the early days.
In the early days.
Yes.
Certainly got a hold of that and got on the right track. Boy, well, he had a great career.
He was – when
great
that's
career.
When DePaul really kind of took off. The year before he got there – and then he was the big recruit. But Mark Aguirre, they used to play on NBC, and he supposedly would be in the hotel, and he'd be running up and down the halls, banging on doors, yelling, NBC, NBC. He just lived for those big national games.
Those were the days.
And DePaul was huge.
Those were the days. So also last night, after watching the NBA Finals, or actually during the NBA Finals, I was a little bit bored when they took a big lead. I know the Pacers came back. Did you watch the first inning of Ohtani?
It was the only inning, really, right? It was the only pitching inning.
I mean, he pitched in the first inning, then he left, and then he stayed in the game. Dodgers won, but what a moment. He hit 100 miles per hour on the gun. Yep. That was essentially a rehab start. Most guys do that in the minor leagues. They're not going to do that because he's Ohtani.
Yeah.
But Dylan Cease and Shohei Ohtani, that was electric for the inning that they matched up head-to-head. But it was fun. It was good theater.
What did he strike anyone out? He did.
No,
right?
He did not.
And that was the over under
1.5.
1.5. And we thought he was going to go two or three.
They thought
innings.
Two. He ended up going one.
Yeah.
And then he came out. But it was the first time in Major League history somebody pitched the top half of the first and then let off the bottom half.
Did he? He didn't do great. He gave up a couple hits, right? I mean, he didn't give up any runs, but. I don't know. I'm a big fan. I love that. Yeah,
that was very cool.
An inning, two hits. He gave up an earned run, 28 pitches.
28 pitches. Yeah. So he'll come out next time. He'll give a little bit deeper, a little bit better. Dave Roberts was laughing in the dugout because I guess he just can't believe how lucky he is to coach a guy like that. But it was funny to see him just enjoying the moment. And, so that was entertaining.
And not for nothing, but did you see that his translator reported to prison yesterday?
Yes, I saw
He's got 57 months. Is that right?
Incidentally, the same day that Ohtani makes his return to the mound, his interpreter goes to the clink.
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it is kind of weird.
I just thought it was an oddity.
It is. Did you also see, speaking of oddities, we talked yesterday a little bit about Angel Reese, she trademarked Me Bounds.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is that to encourage talk of it or to prevent it?
I don't know. That's the thing. It seems like she's leaning into it. It seems like she's leaning into this now, and I don't know that she – I'm sure she realizes all the implications, but it didn't begin as a term of endearment. It did not – it was not really something that – you would want to imagine somebody leaning into, but she is apparently she seeks the trademark in response to Me Bounds, and she had put something on social media about it. So yeah, Angel Reese is trademarking Me Bounds. The look on your face.
I don't know if that's good or not. That's
that
all.
Sounds like a nickname you would come up with, David.
I don't know if that's good or bad.
I think it's funny.
Thanks, Tyler.
I don't know how I feel about that. I don't know is the purpose to change the conversation on the Mebound instead of it being her unable to shoot from 3 feet, it's more about her being as persistent.
Yes, I guess that's it. Okay. Because USA Today, the headline is this: Angel Reese brilliantly trademarked Mebound in response to hate.
Brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
That's good.
So she's going to make some money off the Me Bounds, I suppose. I don't think she had much other
option.
I guess you could choose
to
fight back.
It's part of her game. I mean, it's part of her game. It's a remarkable.
I think Sky back in action tonight. They won the other day.
I believe you're accurate.
Yep.
That's true. They did win a game. Congratulations.
So we got a big show.
We got a lot going on, and we're going to get to it. We've got the pick six. We'll talk about all the big stories around the city and the country, and we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
The Cubs begin a three-game series versus the Brewers tonight. How many runs will they score in the three games combined? Will they manage more than the 2.9 they've averaged over their last 10 home games? Will they win the series? Can they sweep? How important is this Cubs-Brewers series to the Cubs, who are 16 over 500 and hold a 5.5-game lead in the NL Central? And is there a matchup that scares you or one you like?
Yeah, I think this is going to be fun. I like this series. I think it's going to be, you know, the Cubs have a nice lead and they need to extend it. I think they'll win two of the three games, and that will mean it goes from 5.5 to 6.5. I like the idea of them scoring 14 runs. Can't tell you why. 14 is just a number that stays in my head about this. And like I said, I think they'll win two of the three games. I don't believe they'll be able to sweep them. They could sweep them, but it's just hard to do that. And I think we've learned to just win series, that's all you're really after. So you're at home, win the series. And I don't know that there's any real matchup that scares me. I don't know. I think the Cubs might have the matchups that are scarier. And, I'm very curious to see the new pitcher, the young guy they brought up. And I think he's in game two, right? What's his name? Mirolowski or something?
Mizorowski.
Yeah, Mizorowski. So I'm very curious just to see him in game two. But I'm not afraid of him or anything. I think it's going to be good. I think it's going to be a good series, and I think it's, you get them on your turf. Should be good.
I think this series is very important anytime you're taking on your divisional rivals. Mm. I think that's important. The matchup that I like overall, I do agree with you, Mully. I like our matchup better. That PCA against the Brewers, I love that. I think that's going to be good. I think, to me, that was – even though PCA has been playing really well, I feel like that Brewer series really like came out and really made him like, okay, this guy is a star in the making. And I think that was that series when they played against the Brewers. I think overall, like, how many total runs will they score? I think the Cubs in this series will have probably 12. So that's four a game. I think around there, I think their offense will get picked up a little bit. It's getting warmer out there. So overall, I think this is an important series, and I think they can pretty much dominate in this series. Two out of three.
I'll take 2 out of 3. 15 runs. That's a pretty good total. I think they'll probably get going maybe early tonight. And the best matchup, though, is easily tomorrow night with Jameson Taillon against Jacob Mizrowski. You've got youth versus experience. You got the veteran versus the rookie. Mizrowski could be here a while. He's the reason Aaron Civale is a White Sox pitcher right now.
Yep.
Because his promotion required somebody to be demoted out of the rotation. It was Civale. He had to go after he complained and he wouldn't take a demotion to the bullpen. Mizrowski is 6'7", 190. He's a curiosity. 14 pitches over 100 miles per hour in his first start. And he had, I think, 13 swing and misses on 81 pitches. This is somebody who is their version of Cade Horton. He is their Paul Skeens. He is their guy who is the next big thing. And I'm curious to see how good he is and how polished he becomes. So that's tomorrow night. I like that matchup. The Cubs are in a position where it's not a do-or-die series. You are in mid-June. You're playing your divisional I think the team that's most likely to challenge you down the stretch, the Brewers are going to be there. Somehow they find a way. But I don't know that you fear them if you're the Cubs this year, because you've got a type of team and you've got the roster where you shouldn't. And frankly, when you compare the payrolls, they really shouldn't. So this is going to be a fun series. Starts tonight, but the big matchup for me is Tyone versus Mesorowski on Wednesday. And tonight I'm a little bit shaky and nervous about Ben Brown. I feel very good about Cade Horton going Thursday.
I understand the question.
That's the voice of Cubs manager Craig Counsell in the Brewers series. Who will be the player manager Pat Murphy finds a backhanded insult nickname for?
Blue-haired kid.
Or the guy.
With the huge feet.
Could it be Dansby Swanson or Ian Happ? Are they hot right now? And who is the man for the Brewers to fear and Murphy to insult through nickname?
I wouldn't be insulting Ian Happ if I were Murph. I don't think he's a guy you want to really get on the wrong side of. It looks like he might be kind of snarl at you because he just looks like he's intense. Dansby Swanson is hard to criticize. I mean, the guy's got everything. Maybe Matt Shaw gets a random nickname because he's a guy that maybe isn't as familiar to Murph as some of the other Cub veterans. But my sense is that after they face Cade Horton on Thursday, he'll have to come up with some way to describe the kid who just shut him down. Maybe that will be the nickname that comes out of this. I love the way he talked. Almost, he's just poking fun. This is the way he's tweaking, and the kid with the blue hair, it's not blue anymore. And I imagine Kyle Tucker still has big feet, but I never noticed him getting in the way.
The blue-haired kid is you know, kind of a freak.
I mean, that's what I think. I think exactly what Pat Murphy thinks. The blue-haired kid is a freak. I mean, I said it before, PCA. I'm trying to think what other names he would come with for, like, Ian Happ. Like, with the guy with the coffee.
I don't know. Yeah.
The coffee guy. Yeah. And then, what, Swanson, the guy on the Dairy Queen ad or commercial.
Guy with the good hair.
Guy with the beautiful hair. Like, what else would he say? But I'm very intrigued to listen to Pat Murphy post game after these games, just hear him. I think he's really just great content overall.
Oh, hilarious.
I still think it's going to be PCA. I think he's in awe of PCA, and I really just think that PCA is going to have like an awesome series again against the Brewers. I think he got the Brewers number, and I'm just going to predict that going ahead.
I like that answer. I really do. I think that you know, he doesn't have to call him the blue-haired kid, but he does have to kind of marvel at him. And he did. And as you say, Brandon, I don't know if that was the series that where he emerged as kind of a different level player than he was going in, but he did everything in that series. He was running the bases. He was hitting the ball. He was playing great defense. I mean, I think that he was sensational to the point where he did captured the imagination of the Brewers manager, and it was a very funny comment that he made about him. But he also was kind of marveling at how well the kid played, and he did play that well. And frankly, that's the kind of he might be the only guy that can do all those things as well as he can do all those things. He may be the one player that does so many different things very well that he stays in your mind. That might be the guy.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Pete Crow Armstrong and Kyle Tucker are among the top vote getters for NL outfielders on the All-Star team, with PCA getting more votes than all but three major leaguers. Has PCA surpassed Tucker as the Cubs' best player? And in an unexpected way, has PCA's sudden stardom made signing Tucker a lesser priority moving forward, or at least make the idea of Tucker's free agency less scary?
You know, I think there's a lot of truth to this question, and I think that the question itself is the answer to the question, but I hate that. Like, I really don't want that to be the case. You control PCA. He is your player, and you're going to have years with him before you really have to pay him. I don't think that I hope that is not used as a reason not to get Kyle Tucker a deal. I think Kyle Tucker is a seriously good player. He's at the height of his ability. I get it. He's cooled off a bit. But I think that the reason that they're having the season they're having starts with the combination of those guys. And if PCA is above him right now, if his head is a little bit taller right now than Kyle Tucker, that doesn't mean you don't need both of them. So I hate the idea. I get the question. I think it's very insightful. But that better not be the case, because they need to go out, they need to make a big move and get a pitcher, and they need to be able to bring back Kyle Tucker too. And PCA, eventually you want to get him extended, you want to do all that stuff. It seems like PCA is confident enough and understanding enough of his ability that he is not going to rush in and try to get the paycheck right now. He's going to be patient with it. But that doesn't mean that you don't need the same priorities you did before his breakthrough.
Going into the season, it definitely was Kyle Tucker. He was the face of the Cubs. I think now, as the season progressed, PCA is that star. Like, he has right now surpassed. We don't really talk about Kyle Tucker as much as we talk about PCA since his emergence. So with that, I think it makes sense looking at the votes overall, but I don't think that should – you're the Cubs at the end of the day. I think in baseball, you need at least two pure, like, certified all-stars, probably top players right now. Then you need, obviously, a good, like, ace or two. And I think of, like, the Dodgers. I think of the Padres. I think of the Braves. It's like PCA, Kyle Tucker should be that. It should not diminish it, but knowing the history with the Cubs, that's what scares you. And then you got, on top of that, you got Jed Hoyer's contract, too. So that kind of worries overall. You know you're going to have PCA there. You just hope overall that the Cubs will kind of break kind of with history that they've been doing and really sign Cal Tucker to a deal, because this team looked like they have chance to have World Series in their mind for years to come.
Yeah, Jed Hoyer should sign a contract now. He has earned a contract extension. He should definitely remove the doubt. If they wanted to do that over the All-Star break, that would not be too soon or premature. Pete Crow Armstrong, there's only three players in the majors right now that got more All-Star votes. His popularity is soaring, and he's earned it because he's having the best season that you can imagine. Nobody saw this coming this soon, this early. And you would like to keep both of them. I don't know that the emergence of Pete Crow All-Star, that's a nice line, Alex Cohen. He came up with that over the weekend, I think. Pete Crow, All-Star. That's nice. But I think that when you look at Kyle Tucker, you also have to look at it from the big picture. If we're having this conversation, $500 million. If there's a $500 million player on the Cubs, is it Kyle Tucker this year? It might be, but I think that as we sit here right now, Pete Crow Armstrong is having the best season of any Cub player. He's having the most valuable season of any Cub player. Kyle Tucker is second, and he has definitely done very little to diminish his stature in the game. But I do think also, the better Pete Crow Armstrong plays and the more valuable he becomes, I think you do feel less concerned about Kyle Tucker signing with another team that might be willing to go 525, or I don't know that anyone's going to pay $500 million for Kyle Tucker in free agency. Maybe they will, but I don't know. Those numbers are excellent. I don't know if they're $500 million worth.
You know, here's the thing. When we talk about the Cubs a year ago, we talked about they got to get the bullpen cleaned up, but they need a 5-WAR player. They don't have WAR player.
Yes.
Guess what? They got two.
They've got two.
And that's the difference
this year. Which is why I think I'm not concluding anything on June 17th.
Right.
I think, though, that what this does to me is it kind of opens your mind to the idea that you might lose them, but you also might be okay if you do. It doesn't feel like it's make or break, feast or famine, and everything revolves around the Cubs keeping the window open by keeping Kyle Tucker, because that's what I think Pete Crow Armstrong's emergence has done as much as anything, is giving you a second star to build around or to feel good about. So we'll see.
By the way, guys, we did mention Jed Hoyer. He is scheduled to join the afternoon show, Spiegel and Holmes, today at 3.
Look at you, professional radio guy, giving a tease.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
That's the voice of Bruce Levine. The White Sox will be facing the Cardinals this week. Do you see them winning a series given the way they have been losing close games on the road? The Cardinals will start Eric Fetty in Game 3. He's 3-6 with a 3.65 ERA. Do you feel differently about trading him last year now that Miguel Vargas has developed into a player?
Not really. I like the fact that Vargas finally has developed into the kind of player the Sox thought they were getting. But I also feel like that was one of the more bizarre trades that I remember, because it was Fetty going to the Cardinals and then somebody go. The Sox ended up getting rid of Kopech and Fetty and getting Miguel Vargas in return. And
Tommy Pham also part of that deal as well.
Don't forget Tommy Pham. Although Tommy Pham got picked off the other day. Did you see that? And I was like, oh, man, he's going to punch somebody.
I love
he looked
Tommy
mad. Tommy, he looked really mad.
Tommy Pham was great.
He was great. But am I supposed to feel better about them giving away two pitchers for a guy? Vargas is good. I don't know if I feel better about Fetty going for nothing. He was a trade piece. I don't think that was one of the better trades that was executed. Now, Chris Getz, he recovered well. The Garrett Crochet trade is one that will age very well. But I don't think that Eric Fetty is, when he pitches Thursday night at Ray Field, I don't think we're going to reminisce about, boy, that was a trade the Sox really were glad they made.
When I think of Fetty, I don't really think of the Vargas trade too much. I don't really tie Fetty into that. I know it was a part of it. I always think of the Dodgers, and I think of Kopech more. So, I mean, seeing him out there, I think he's going to dominate against the Sox. Yeah. I just feel like anybody who used to play for the Sox, they go against the Sox, and they just tear them up.
They get to kill
them. That's what worries me. Could they win this series? They could. But, like, the trend that they've been going of late, just losing these close games, I think it's going to be competitive. I see them losing 2 out of 3. They probably take one maybe in this one. I mean, we started off really feeling good about the Sox, and they are still heading in the right direction. But just of late with how they've been playing these games has been kind of frustrating just because they've been so close. And I just think that trend's going to continue overall.
Yeah, I don't feel any better about Eric Fetty getting traded than I did. And in fact, you know, we've talked a lot about some of the young Cubs pitchers and how you're gonna deal with the limiting innings. The same question needs to be had about the White Sox pitchers. They might not be as good as Cade Horton, every one of them, but they've got some good young pitchers. And they got a lot of injured pitchers. And I don't know how they're going to get through the whole
Which guy
season.
Are you worried about specifically?
Shane Smith.
Shane Smith
more than anybody
tonight.
Else,
yeah.
I suppose. You know, Burke kind of started at the end of last year. But they've got young pitchers they're leaning on. Hell, I mean, Davis Martin's one of their best pitchers. Cannon's already out. He's going to come back. I'm just saying, you got to be aware of all the innings stuff going on with them too. It's baseball, and they lost what they had. 7 guys have surgery, so it's like they don't have the same kind of depth. I saw that they cut 2 pitchers from AAA. I mean, that's usually like, well, we don't need these guys anymore. I don't know. Like, you know, Hauser will be going against Fetty. I think that's really interesting because they kind of plucked him from nowhere, and they kind of did that with Fetty, that going into the Korean League and bringing in a guy that ended up eating innings and being a pretty decent pitcher for them. I thought he had value, and I think they could still use him, frankly. But what do I know? Listen, they've done a good job with player development, and we're watching that happen, and they seem like they have a plan for how they're bringing people forward, which is different than it's been before, but they still have some players on that roster who are sort of excess pieces that aren't going to be long-termers and are holding spots. So feel free to keep going, bring up some more guys. I saw the 3 players they're thinking of. You know who one of them is? Wickelman Gonzalez. He is one of the guys they're debating bringing up.
That would be fantastic.
Get them all up here.
We should definitely have him on the show.
Wickelman?
When he gets called up.
Love that guy.
I know you do. He was like the key to the trade for you.
No, he wasn't.
There was Winkelman, Gonzalez, and the throw-in Kyle Teal.
He was the forgotten player, and that's all I would say.
Pick six.
Paul Sullivan writes in today's Chicago Tribune that, quote, with the acquisition of Rafael Devers, the Giants put pressure on all teams, including the Cubs, to show a little urgency, end quote. Do you agree with that? What does that mean in the Cubs context?
Well, it means the Cubs need to go out and get a star player, a really good pitcher who can help them out and make sure, who's capable of winning a playoff game. That's what they need, more so than anything else. When they finally make the deal for the pitcher that they're looking for, you got to ask that question, can this guy win in the playoffs? Because that's hugely important. I would say that that there is definitely some pressure on them because there is another team that went out, made a huge move, and didn't care about the money and was happy to pay a guy who brings them the slug that they don't have. That's not the same thing the Cubs are looking for, but they are looking for an impact pitcher. Let's hope they get the Rafael Devers of pitchers.
I agree with it. Yes, they need an ace. That's what the Cubs need. And it made me think to you guys' question with Heyman talking about the Devers trade. Should it put, like, will the trades happen sooner? And I really think the Cubs should be, if they're not already, should be on the phone right now, talking to teams right now. They saying it's going to be a seller's market. I mean, I want an ace for this team. They get an ace for this team, and then Shota comes back. Now you're looking like the team that you should and probably can win a playoff series.
I don't want to wait until July 30th or 31st to evaluate the Cubs trade for an ace. And I think that's kind of the point of what Sully's writing, and I think I like that idea. And I love baseball seasons that are like this one where you start to apply the pressure early because the Cubs are playing for something. So it is relevant, and you do wonder each time you spin through the rotation, if you do so without the ace you're going to trade for eventually, it's a missed opportunity. So when the Giants go for Devers and they give up what they gave up and they're willing to take on that contract, it puts the pressure on the Cubs to go out and match a team that now feels like they're good enough to compete for a pennant. The Giants, you don't make that move unless you're serious about contending, and they seem to be serious about contending. So now the Cubs, you know what you need. Other teams may need it as well, but you have to find out whoever that is who's available. We may not know who the names are. We may not know who they're pondering. Well, who should we give up? What if it's Dylan Cease? He pitched last night. He's not having a great year, but is he still available? Because there were rumblings in the spring training that he was.
I would think that he would be able to win a playoff game.
Dylan Cease most certainly could,
yeah.
And he would be a top of the rotation guy. Is Sandy Alcantara down in Miami? We're going to start watching him a little closer.
He could win a playoff game.
Marquez in Denver for the Rockies. He's a guy that maybe you fit that category. There are other guys. Arizona, we talked about those guys, those two, Gallen and Kelly.
I like the way Brandon put it. He said, you make a trade for a pitcher, and then Shota comes back. Shota's going to be back in about 2 weeks.
Shota,
right?
Is going to be back, but do not make – that's why this is a different season. In ordinary seasons, you may look at Shota and you may say the proverbial, well, it's like trading for a player at the deadline. Not this year. This year, you have to get Shota back, welcome him into the rotation, say, okay, go do your thing, and we're going to get you a compliment.
No, he's saying you get the pitcher, then you welcome Shota back.
Yeah, I want the trade to happen soon.
Well, sooner rather than later. It's June 17th. Yeah, it's June 17th, and you don't need to wait till July 17th to still be talking about it.
Answer this question, you know, a lot, obviously.
That's the voice of Connor Bedard. How would you explain, I'm sorry, wrong question. Both Team USA and Team Canada announced their first six players on their Olympic rosters, and obviously young Connor Bedard wasn't on the list for Canada. What do you think Bedard's chances are to make Team Canada, and what will it say if he does not?
Well, I don't think it's any slight that he wasn't among the first six, because when you look at the first six for Canada, you're talking about legends. You're talking about the best players in the world. Crosby, McKinnon, McCarr, McDavid. Goodness sakes. Those four alone. And then Braden Point and Sam Reinhart. They're all deserving. They're all elite. There are 19 more spots to be given out. It's a 25-player roster. Connor Bedard may not make it. I don't know that that's exactly that shocking to say or even suggest. It would be terrific if he did. If he did, it would be a step forward into elite status. He's not made that step yet because I think a lot of the people around him haven't been good enough to make him better. I think a lot of things have contributed to why there's a perception that he hasn't really realized his potential. The reality is he's done things as a teenage NHL player that few others have done in the history of the sport. But it's a difficult team to make. They're pretty good at hockey north of the border, and I don't know that he's a lock for that team. If he doesn't make it, he'll have to process that disappointment and deal with the perception. Let's hope he does.
I got it at 15% that maybe Connor Bedard will make Team Canada. I just don't think he's there yet, and I think that's what NHL hockey, that's what how they view Connor Bedard right now. He, like you said, Davey, he hasn't made that step yet. He came in with all this hype, and even though he's been playing well, it's probably not still meeting the expectations of being the face, the future face for hockey overall. I would say maybe he should make it just because of he's the name and maybe they're banking on him. But if you're going off his play and all the criticism he's been getting, which is a little bit unfair, he's just not there yet compared to all the other legends that's on Team Canada. So I got it at 15%, and hopefully this should just put fuel in his back and just take that next step.
Yeah, he was snubbed from the Four Nations face-off yep. roster. So it's hard to avoid that reality when you think about it. And when you also think about it, you mentioned the six guys you mentioned. That's the first two lines. You start talking about filling out different lines. He's not like that kind of player, right?
Grindy.
He's not the grindy yeah. guy that you need for something like that. I know that the general manager, Don Sweeney, has called him part of the next wave, that Bedard will be part of the next wave of great players. So I don't know where he sits in that next wave. Is he at the top of the next wave? Is he going to be kind of part of the next wave, but not a keystone of it? I think Brandon, you're probably accurate. I think there's probably a less than 20% chance that he gets it right now, just because of everything that went down and the fact that he was snubbed. And, you know, they didn't really, it's not like they failed because they didn't have him. So I don't know how they feel about building up that roster moving forward, but it seems like the Four Nations face-off was a roster for just that tournament, and I think the same thing will probably apply to the Olympics.
It also doesn't bode well, based on what you just said. Five of the six early announcements were forwards.
Yeah.
So the next, you still have a lot of defensemen that have to be named, and
yes.
you're going to be shorter. So five.
You may even want a goalie.
Well, you're going to have yeah.
I'm joking.
That'll be a good controversy, depending on which goalie they pick. But when you start with five forwards, it definitely limits the options moving forward.
Is Frankie Nazar any closer with Team USA?
Well,
because of what he did.
That's a really good question. I think because of his success this summer, he led Team USA in scoring. He'll get a longer look. Boy, if he made the U.S. Olympic team, based on all of the talent in the league. That would be huge for him, and I wouldn't count him out.
All right, we've got the extra point next. It's Mully and Haw at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
How would you explain Game 5 of the NBA Finals and where it's at now? Is it over? And what happens tonight when the Stanley Cup final finally resumes with the silver chalice in the building and the Panthers poised to repeat?
Could be a tough night for anybody to pick the Oilers. I wouldn't want to be that guy. That could be rough. I feel like the Panthers probably will close it out tonight, and I think Brad Marchand will be a guy who has himself a game because he's had himself a series, and that was one of the best trades at the deadline, probably in NHL history. Because if it leads to the Panthers, do they repeat without Marchand? Maybe. But I think he's been the guy that's put them over the top, given them an edge, and allowed a team that is finding purpose in the postseason. They're repeating. Sometimes when you are going for a second straight, it can be hard to find that edge. And he provided it. So that's one of the best trades you're going to see at the deadline. And give him credit, even though it's grudging respect. It is respect. So I think that probably ends tonight. Last night was really hard to watch because since the fourth quarter of game four in Indy, I think OKC has been the team we expected them to be the entire series. They're the team that won 68 games, a team with all the depth. And last night, when you look at Shai Gilgeous-Alexander having the night that he had 31-10, and then it wasn't even Jalen Williams scored 40. They combined for 71 points. They don't look like they're going to lose. And I think that game is probably going to – that series probably could end in Indy. That's going to be tough to watch as well. So that's what's ahead for these series, I think.
Wow.
And tonight it's over.
Watching game five. Once Halliburton got hurt, I feel like it was pretty much over. And now going into game six, I think I saw something, too, where, like, neither one of these teams lost back-to-back until now.
Right.
Once no team's lost two games in a row, and now that's over with this. And I felt like game five, that was the Pacers' shot right there. And I feel like now that's over, you go back to Indy, unless they have, like, one of those role players or the others, as they call it, like, really step up and have a big game. It's going to be over. And, I mean, game five was the Jalen Williams game, him dropping 40. Now arguably becoming of, Scottie Pippen now. He's the next Scottie Pippen.
Whoa.
All of a sudden now. I didn't say that.
No, you're hearing that.
The network was saying that. And then also I do want to add this in real quick before I get into the hockey. I just want to say that one thing that was interesting about game five, that they were broadcasting the starting lineup, something that they – don't really do. They was broadcasting them doing the starting lineups, trying to take something, I guess, from NBC.
Oh, I didn't notice
that.
Yeah,
so they did that. So that was interesting. When it comes to the Stanley Cup overall, I have betting interest in this, and I have the Oilers in seven, so I'm right with you, David. But I think this is going to be the Panthers' chance to kind of close it out here and back-to-back. I don't want it to happen, but I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I kind of feel like both series are done. I really do. I think that, you know, I hate to say it, David, because I also picked Edmonton.
Yeah.
But I do think that Florida wins this thing again. And I think it happens tonight. And I think that, you know, when you talk about Tyrese Halliburton being injured and not being able to score and the number of turnovers they had, I don't know how that gets better either. I think that when we talked about these series, I felt the Pacers needed their two star players to be their star players. And now if one of them's compromised, I don't see how they do it. I really don't. Now, maybe they can push it another game, but I would say likely both of these series are over.
That's sad.
It is.
Sad for
Not
Hoosiers.
Ready for that.
Sad for people who understand that tonight could be the last night of the hockey season.
Yeah.
It's all over. What now? What purpose do we have? There's no more hockey.
Kate Horton.
Yes, Thursday night. Thank
you'll
you.
Prop you up.
I'm back.
Okay.
I'm back.
All right, we'll be right back, too. 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on this car.
This is not the outcome that we had expected, and it's forced me to reflect on the interactions that I've had, not just with Rafi, but with other players, opportunities to communicate differently. Anytime you get to this point where, as Sam said, you reach an inflection point and you fail to reach alignment, I need to own things that I could have done better. And I don't know if this outcome would have played out any differently. I think that there's a decent chance that it wouldn't have, but I absolutely need to have the humility to think back on the interactions and figure out what I could have done better.
Mullion Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's Craig Breslow, late of the Chicago Cubs, who, of course, is in charge in Boston. And that is really an interesting admission, the idea that because he didn't keep Rafael Devers.
He's blaming communication.
Well, he didn't.
His own.
He didn't keep him appraised of the fact that they were pursuing and trying to get a different third baseman.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up kind of blowing the relationship with the guy. And, listen.
What obligation does an executive have, though, to keep current player abreast of what he might be doing in a way that affects him? Because do you really want to put that out there before you actually do it? Do you have a responsibility to keep your players abreast of what things might happen until they do?
I think it's a great question, but I think that in this case, when you pay the guy the amount of money they've given him,
mm-hmm.
they've made him the face of their organization.
Mm-hmm.
He's their power hitter. And if you are going to move his position,
mm-hmm.
if you've decided you're going to do that, without telling him that, he shouldn't be, because of the role he plays within the team, you kind of have to keep him abreast of what your movements are.
Well, I respect where you're coming from. I look at it maybe a different way. I look at it from the standpoint of, you have somebody who you just invested $300 million in.
And so you figure he'll go along with whatever
you're paying
tell him.
Yeah. An exorbitant amount of money to do whatever you ask, essentially. You're not, especially when you're not really asking him to do something that is that beyond the pale. I don't really think that asking him to move off third base to be the designated hitter, or even to learn first base, we're not talking about something that is, you're not benching him.
No,
you're not making him a part-time player. You're not reducing his role.
But you are changing his role. You are changing it. And you are doing it without talking it through with him, without explaining it to him. I'm just saying, when you are paying someone that kind of money, you are entering into a partnership with them. And I think I'd be very curious to find out, next time we talk to Jed, or maybe the boys this afternoon can ask him.
He's on at 3 o'clock today, so he's going home.
I would love to know. When you moved Seiya Suzuki to designated hitter,
mm-hmm.
were you having conversations with him about it? Because Seiya,
that's
God
a great
bless
point.
Him, has been a really good servant to the club.
Okay.
He's taken it. He's moved. He's having a great year.
I think two things can be true. That's a really good example.
And they brought him back in to play
because
when they had an injury.
They did, and he can play the outfield.
Yes.
Just not every day.
But he played left field.
But left field, right field.
Nonetheless, David, it was a different position.
Craig Counsell pointed out during the offseason that one of his goals was to have better communication with Seiya Suzuki. And I think going back to that example, maybe that is one of the things that got in the way last year. I'm not quite sure, but I think that communication is always going to be something you value, and that plays a big role in why players are happy or not happy, or productive or unproductive. I just think that you don't necessarily owe that to him, especially because if you talk about him before it happens, before something happens, are you risking, there's a
him blurting it out
to
someone else.
There's a secrecy. Yeah, his agent may get out there. May sabotage the process. And, well, he's not going to move from third base. And that may affect how able you are to get Alex Bregman.
Yeah, like I said, I just think there has to be almost a partnership with guys that are making a certain amount of money, because you got to keep them happy. And I think you're right. There might be an assumption, well, I'm paying you, do what you're told, but that might not be as obvious to the player.
Depends on the personality of the player.
So Rafi, a guy that did not like moving off of third base. And then after they said to him, oh, by the way, we got an injury at first, why don't you play some first base? He said, absolutely not, because you didn't move me to first base. You moved me to DH. He got in the weeds with nonsense. And don't you almost need to know how his ego will handle things like this?
That's maybe the misstep here, is that not knowing your player maybe needed to be involved along the way, not knowing your player well enough to understand how touchy or sensitive he would be. David Ortiz told a story yesterday about how he struggled to communicate with Devers just as a former player, just as a guy who has a big place in Red Sox history, because he didn't return messages and he wasn't one of these communicative guys. If you're the Red Sox, you do have maybe a responsibility there, and that may be where they shirked it, not knowing how you're dealing with a diva, and it comes with a different set of rules.
Yeah. Anyway, I thought it was real stand up of him to talk like
Craig
that.
Craig Breslow is a guy like that,
but you know,
stand
what?
Up guy.
As we talked about yesterday, he's catching a lot of grief.
Oh yeah.
I mean, there are a lot of Red Sox fans not happy.
No.
About the way that was handled.
Roman Anthony homered last night, though.
Lost their guy. I saw that. Left. Yeah. Should have included him in that deal. If only you had another crochet. All right. 312-644-6767. That is the telephone number. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.